And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick.
Good morning.
That's him. Chase McAbee.
Nashville. How we doing?
That's him. Max Herz back at our game studios. Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.
.com.
I miss you guys already.
It was a dramatic pause.
It was a pregnant pause?
Yeah, or something like that. Max, what's up?
I miss you guys. I'm all alone here. No here Jason, again, no right? You guys. Marquise just left.
What's Marquise doing?
He is going to be where you guys are very shortly, I am told.
Oh, very cool.
Potentially with Braden Gall and Nick Kale. That's what the rumors are saying.
I don't like them, so they can stay away.
Nick did have a good line. I heard it on Morning Drive where they were talking about LSU's receiver, Chase, who we'll talk to Mitch Light from Athlon Sports a little bit later, who had quite the day against Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And they said, but he's kind of the third option. And Nick said, yeah, kind of like our Chase.
Well, you know.
You got to give it to Nick, man. He's got the
look. He's quick. He's got the one-liners.
He's got the quick one-liners, and you know they did. They got it.
Yeah.
Which you know sometimes you gotta you know that's to get the you have to get the punchline to Listen, enjoy it.
I don't have to be the first option. I don't have to be the second option. I'm just happy to be an option.
That's a good way to go through life.
And here I am.
Last night was a thriller on Monday Night Football. I hope you didn't turn away because you missed nothing. The Redskins stink. They're bad.
Yeah.
Just for all the, you know, Mariota and offensive line woes here, just throw in the tape of the Redskins and go, holy crap.
Might make you feel a little bit better.
How many times did Booger McFarland say Jay Gruden's going to get fired?
No kidding. Wasn't that
weird? He called for his job so many times.
That was really weird.
But haven't they had enough coaches over time to have you saying,
is it really the coach? Is it really the coach?
Isn't it maybe a bigger problem?
Might be the owner.
Like maybe, by the way, their PR director just was let go.
Who we know very well.
Who we knew very well.
He's probably happy to be out of there, honestly.
Tony Wiley.
Oh.
Who
once upon a time was the Tennessee Titans PR director.
Yeah, and
there was
never stories being lacked on his watch. There was
no, and honestly, I don't know who would want that job because it puts you in a ridiculously tough spot having to defend Daniel Snyder,
right?
A lot of times,
right.
And the goofiness and madness that goes on in that front office. Like, how do you win in that job? He lasted 9 years. I give him credit for doing that.
No kidding.
He probably needs a vacation.
Remember when we used to go?
I guess he's going on. And Tony's a good guy. We've known him for a long time. So he's going on to work for the Special Olympics. So we wish him well. And we congratulate him for lasting that long.
Oh. Well, you deserve.
He went to the Texans after he left the Titans.
Yes.
Because he's from Houston. He was with the Oilers when the team moved up here. And he went into the top spot for the Titans for a while, then to Houston, then to Washington. So it's been a long time in that job in the NFL.
The history of the Tennessee Titans PR department.
So there was an article that came out the other day, some amusing stories where he's trying to get him out of a fire. And
there's been so much drama with the Redskins.
They said this. No, we didn't say that. And wait a minute.
We used to do a weekly with John McClain. And remember he would come on every week and just rip. Who was the guy in the Redskins front office that he would just rip and say, this guy's backstabbing everybody?
Oh, yeah,
I was like,
dang. Vinny Serrato.
Vinny Serrato, that's it.
I think he's still there, isn't
he? No,
I think he's gone. Vinny Serrato?
I tell you, you can't get out of Vinny's way. Stab you right in the back. He's killing that organization. And I was like, dang, don't hold back, John.
But what's really changed?
But that's what I'm saying. The Redskins, it's been a circus.
By the way, did you guys – I mean, I texted you guys about this. Tons of Bears fans there last night.
Yeah.
For Monday night. Like,
Well, I mean, is that – you act like that's surprising.
No, it's Monday night, though. Like, do they have to get back to work today? Or
what?
Do you are think, they just taking a week off?
Do you think Joe Theismann and John Riggins are under center and in the backfield? Do you think this is 1990 what? The Redskins aren't exactly a hot ticket.
Alex Smith was on the sidelines. I did see that.
Yeah.
So, good to see him up
like,
and
I get
around.
The Redskins.
I don't really think people buy tickets for Alex Smith.
No.
I get that there are tickets available, but the Bears fans, like, it's one thing to go there Sunday. You fly back Sunday night. You're in work. So, these Bears fans are basically like, Did they go all weekend and just stay for the game Monday, or just fly in Monday?
Maybe they had business on Monday in D.C.
Maybe
they conducted business all day and pleasure at night.
Maybe it's Redskins fans that are like, you know what? Forget it. We'll just convert, and we'll just be, you know, we'll be for the winning team for a change. You know, you never know.
Maybe there's just, you know, people with Chicago ties. A lot of them live in D.C. That's probably some of it. But that
Coach Ditka, you know, he
I did a couple
people.
Double takes. When they were making good plays, there's a roar of the crowd. You're like, wait, is this game?
We've experienced that here.
They're in Washington, aren't they?
We've experienced that here.
You're talking about the same fan base that's been selling out 2 o'clock baseball games for decades.
That's true.
Yeah.
Do they work in Chicago?
I think they've been accused of not working.
80% of the world's working.
Those bleacher creatures, they don't even work. Get a job, you bums.
There's a famous, if you haven't heard it, and of course, thanks to Pete Weber, we've heard it a few times, but Lee Elia in the early 80s had a tirade. The team was really struggling. This is before lights at Wrigley Field, and the team was 5-14 or something, and they're all over him. And he just went on a rant, and he got on everybody, including the fans.
The ones in the bleachers.
He deduced that if they were there at the game in the afternoon, they must not have had a job.
Yeah. Which is great for business.
Great for business, yeah. Great, hey, great move.
I don't
to get
know
on
why
your...
anybody shows up to our day games. Get a job. Stay away from our games in the afternoon. You bums.
He didn't last that long.
I've taken. Well, geez, shocking.
Can't imagine why.
I've taken the tour at Wrigley Field, and you know why they have like basically the penitentiary fence?
Yeah.
Because they would the bleacher creatures or bleacher bums. They would get drunk and. Jump up, people breaking their legs, trying to jump over the wall to jump onto the field. And it was a mess. Like every game, they would just get, you know, off old style. And the next thing you know, they're running around on the field or they're laying out on the field screaming as their legs broken. And they had to put up fencing.
The way, if you want to listen to the Lee Elia tirade, we can't help you on the radio station. No. I would recommend going on YouTube and doing it, but do it away from. People, if you're worried about some language.
It's like Tommy Lasorda. I mean, there's certain clips we'd like to play, but
wildly
entertaining. Can't.
We can't play them.
We can't beep enough.
Yeah, it's like you'd have to fill in so many blanks. It's not even worth it.
Look, we try our best to cover all that stuff up anyway. So, speaking of fans jumping on the field, I know it happened on the – I think it was a Sunday night game. I watched a lot of football on Sunday, so I can't remember, but I think it was a Sunday night game. Somebody jumped on the field, and they were like, well, we're not going to show that. But and then they're giving commentary of him getting tackled. I'm like, just show it. Like, they're there. Like, who cares? I know that the networks are all like
– I say embarrass them.
Yeah.
I mean, why is
– They always cut away and don't show it because they don't want to give the fan any more attention. I'm like, who cares? It's funny. Just let us see him get tackled by security.
Yeah.
Like, who cares?
I'd say just the opposite. Shame them.
Yeah.
Let people be like, dude, what were you doing?
Actually, it was an afternoon CBS game. That's what it was.
Okay.
But, I just think that stuff's funny.
Anybody care to guess the most watched college football game over the weekend?
Just in general or our area?
Notre Dame, Georgia.
Notre Dame, Georgia,
yeah.
Almost 10 million viewers. Second?
Wisconsin, Michigan?
Yep.
Third? Was it?
Yep. Third?
Auburn, Texas A&M?
Boy, you guys are on a roll. Fourth? This one's going to surprise you.
Florida, Tennessee?
No.
actually, Florida, Tennessee was fifth.
Okay.
How about that?
Nationally, not locally, you're saying.
Yeah, nationally. Yeah.
Well, ESPN.
Fifth. It was ESPN.
Had the full ESPN.
Yeah.
I think there's intrigue with Florida, too.
Oklahoma State and Texas.
Oh,
that ended up being an entertaining game.
And honestly, slid under the radar this weekend. Like, didn't a lot of – of course, Mike Gundy, I don't know why somebody's knocking on the door. I don't know what – we're not going to let you in the back door at Centennial Sportsplex. By the way, we're live at Centennial. But
we are. And by the way, we should let this be known. Peter Laviolette is going to join us at 10:20.
Yes.
So a heads up, a little tease there.
A heads up for the head coach.
Yeah.
Mike Gundy was asked in the, you know, the Monday teleconference all the coaches do. You know, they all have to do their little time zone. Did you see where Mike Gundy was asked by the AP reporter in Oklahoma?
I did not see this.
He asked about if T. Boone Pickens left him. There was an article that was written. It was more of a satire. It was it was for fun.
Right.
He wasn't happy.
Saying that T. Boone Pickens was going to leave Mike Gundy money every month to get his hair cut and the mullet cut. But it, like I said, it was a joke.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the AP reporter asked him,
humor.
Was this true?
Yeah.
And Mike Gundy was like, it's jackasses like you that ruin it for everybody. He's like, why do they let you on this call? Why is he on this call? Like, this guy has no business being on this call. Never give him the number again. And he just shreds this guy from AP for asking that. I'll say this about Mike Gundy. He doesn't care.
He's not afraid.
No. That's for sure. He does not care. Gentlemen, I do care. The results are in.
Oh, yes. A big announcement. I mean, this is the city has been waiting with bated breath.
I don't know about that, but I've been waiting.
I feel like we should wait for Peter Laviolette to get his thoughts.
That's a show patience. We'll pass it along.
But we know the answer. I mean, is he hurt or is he injured? We're about to find out. I mean, I was injured. Okay?
Yeah.
Wasn't hurt. We know that.
You played through some pain, too.
I did. Out of Vanderbilt Legends, it was well documented that, unfortunately, I had to bag playing golf at Brent Peterson's fabulous golf event.
A late scratch.
It was not a healthy scratch. It was just a scratch. I would have given it a go. It would have been a really bad idea, as I found out 5 days later. But I did go after the show yesterday. I got the MRI results. And, in fact, my doctor was going to come on. He's going to come on a little bit later. He was supposed to come on now, but he is actually in surgery. So that has precedent. It moves above what we're doing.
More important.
So I said, hey, you know, I got it. We thought we could make it work with the surgery schedule today, but he's actually going to come on a little bit later. But I do have a torn meniscus in my left knee.
Torn meniscus.
Surgery on October 8th.
So you're going to miss a game.
I am.
What's the timetable?
He is very optimistic that they're, you know, 48 hours. Like, I'm thinking I'm out. The goal is to be back on Thursday. It's Tuesday. Out Tuesday and Wednesday. The goal is to be back on Thursday.
What about the third base coaching box?
Full go.
Third base coaching box? Pitching?
Pitching.
Pitching to the kids?
I mean, that's fall break, so we're shutting it down that week. Because there's a lot of people going away.
I feel like a meniscus, this is the best case scenario.
Yes, it is. Of all the knee evils, this is the best. I feel like I escaped.
That's the good news. But here's what you got to watch out for, Darren. The follow-through, you know, the stride, the pitch, you don't want to compensate. It could lead to arm problems.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, some pitchers, they hurt their knee, and they change their stride, their motion, the mechanics, and all of a sudden your arm goes.
You need to remember this, too.
The tidal wave is counting on you.
Your body.
This is your last year. You're retiring after this year.
No.
It's kid pitch after this.
Well, spring. We got one more.
Well, that's what I mean. This is your final year.
Yeah.
And then next fall, right, we'll be
this
kid
is
pitch.
It. We got to have you for this
year.
This
is true.
Just remember, your body is like a car, okay? New parts tell on old parts. So just be aware of that.
Thanks. Mechanic McCabe right there with your latest tip.
That's what I'm here for.
He told us that brakes were expensive, and now he adds this. I mean, he is all over the car scene.
I'm here. So, I'm here to help you.
So I was actually thrilled. I've never been thrilled about a surgery in my life. But I felt like, because I told you guys, I thought I was thinking the worst, but I feel like I escaped. I feel lucky that it's just the meniscus. You know, you've never had we've compared all of our knee notes. You've never had meniscus?
No.
Okay.
I've had the torn ACL.
Me either. Me either.
It.
Yep.
Me neither.
25 years ago on this day, Cordell Stewart, Hail Mary, Colorado.
Oh, the Colorado flag?
Versus Michigan.
Wow. Keith Jackson.
To Michael Westbrook. Is that right? Was it Westbrook?
Yep. Okay. Right.
Wow.
All right, we come back. We should be joined by Predators head coach Peter Laviolette. That will be next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, we're live here at Centennial Sportsplex. Predators continuing on with their training camp / preseason. Speaking of preseason, back at it tomorrow night, Bridgestone Arena. Their final home tilt in the preseason action. It'll be against the Carolina Hurricanes. 7 o'clock puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. In fact, Willie, I think be your first TV duties. Is that correct?
Yes. Wednesday night we will have our first telecast of the season, the preseason home finale. So we're looking forward to that.
Greg, partner ball, working hard here at Centennial. Yes.
Bringing chairs over here.
Thank you, partner.
Good man right there.
It's a busy man. So you guys are going to actually broadcast Wednesday, you and Mace?
Yep, got the whole crew.
Whole crew.
Yep.
Put Crispy
Lindsay,
to work.
Lindsay, Kara, Crispy, yep. Everybody's
I saw Lindsay's been doing a lot of ACC stuff.
Yeah, she's had back-to-back big upsets. She was at the Citadel when they beat Georgia Tech and then was at App State.
Beat North Carolina.
At North Carolina where App State blocked the field goal to beat Mack Brown in the Tar Heels.
Okay.
So where the ACC might be concerned. Like, where are we sending Lindsay? We got the ACC team's getting beat. This isn't good.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So remember that. And then Friday it'll be in Raleigh to close out the preseason against those same Hurricanes. So two more games this week, and then it is on. After Friday, it is going to be regular season action, and we should have the head coach join us here in just a moment. And, of course, they have, as we talked about yesterday on the program, whittled down their roster. They are very close to getting to that magic number, three away, and I think those are going to be the tough decisions. We always say there's a battle, right? And then we always, you know, in football we say maybe the battle's four or five guys in a 53-man roster. Hockey, sometimes it's one spot, maybe sometimes it's two, three guys battling for a spot. And so they will battle. Hopefully we will get some of the players on as well here from Centennial. But it'll be interesting to see how they play out Wednesday and Friday preseason to get ready for the regular season and to finalize that roster.
The thing I thought about yesterday when I was kind of looking at the roster and getting an idea of what I thought was going to happen is sending Pitlick and Tolvanen down already. I mean, you know what you have. You know what they are. You've seen enough. They can get some more conditioning in the AHL and then eventually be back. It gives you now two games to get more of a look of the three spots and the guys that are up for those three, up for the, you know, the last roster spots and are going to be the three cuts. And so I think in a way that's, you know, it's going to be a good thing for us to get an evaluation. Obviously the coaches that are going to be making the moves, but I'm curious to see how those guys play in the next two games.
Well, we all will be. So as we put the headset on the head coach, Peter Laviolette has now joined us on the program. He's come down to sit at our level. Monday in the doubleheader, he was up atop getting a different view. How was that to kind of not be on the bench?
Yeah, it was good. You know, that game early on with the doubleheader, I really like it because it's a great opportunity to see a good portion of our players. You know, from a system standpoint, a lot of our guys have been here for so many years now that it's more of a reminder than implementing something new. And we felt like we had a pretty good handle on it. So to sit with David Poyle and just to talk about what we saw and talk about some of the players, I feel like it was really, a good day for all of us. So, we kept some of our big guys out. That was a change as well. We usually played them in this game, and it was an opportunity for them to get some time together and work on the power play and really slow things down and go through some routes and some movements and let Dan Lambert take over and do his thing. And so when we finally did put them together in the game, there was a lot of positives with that as well. But, it gave us that day alone, just sitting up top, gave us a chance to look at things.
Yeah, it is. Look, we've all sat down on the glass, albeit not on the bench, and we've all been up where you are in the TV booth and where you were. I mean, it is a different perspective. Well, it sounds silly, but it is a different perspective.
You have no idea how fast this game and how physical this game is until you sit
down low
on the glass or on the bench and see the power behind it. And every row you move up, it slows down. And so where I'm sitting up there, it looks slow at times. But and you can actually see things developing, which you can't. Sometimes you're looking through it when you're on the bench. And when you're above it, you get a much better view of the routes and the systems and what it is that you're trying to do. So, if you usually sit up high and you ever get the opportunity to sit down low, you'll see the speed and the power of the game.
I learned, Peter, a long time ago to not doubt coaches, because I used to be like, oh, hooey fooey, it's coach speak. Yeah, talk about these camp battles. There's not really battles. They know who's going to be. I learned that, no, there actually are camp battles. And so when you say that certain guys are vying for a position
right.
every year, they really are. Sometimes it plays out and sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
You've got some intriguing camp battles here this year. I remember last year, this time we were going, who's this little Rocco Grimaldi guy that the Panthers took in the second round?
Sure, that's a perfect example. And, you know, when we say it, it's true. And, that you know, that's a player that wasn't on our team. So you're talking about a player that wasn't on our team. Right now, we're looking for somebody to play 18 minutes a night up front on the forward position. And so that's a battle inside of our camp, and we're trying to evaluate that to get that right and to get that piece right. And it doesn't have to be something that's written in stone and that's it. It's the way it is. But right now, we're looking to start something and then maybe show a little bit of patience with it as well and give it an opportunity to see if there's some chemistry. There's guys that were on our team last year that might have been scratched. And right now, they're looking to get into the lineup. So those battles do take place in camp. But Rocco Grimaldi is a great example of somebody who impressed the crap out of us in training camp last year, and we were able to watch him grow as a player. We had to send him down to the American Hockey League. If you remember, to start the year, he was one of their top scorers and really did an excellent job. We found ourselves in a position where we needed a player and never looked back. He was one of our stronger players as we moved through that Dallas series. So it just goes to show you that there's something always available. If you come and work hard every day and try to do the right things and play with passion and purpose, good things can happen.
I want to make you uncomfortable. I want to talk about you.
Sure, sure.
Year 6.
Let me figure out how I can deflect this really quick.
At least I gave you a heads up, right?
Now I'm thinking about it, okay? Now I can put it
Shield
on.
Is up.
What a beautiful day it is today, isn't it? Gorgeous outside.
Let's go back 6 years ago when you took this post, which, by the way, year 6, that time has flown.
Yeah.
The mindset of you coming into this market, not that you were unaware, but you had spent a lot of Eastern Conference, haven't really spent any time here, to where you are today and that everything in between. What has that journey been like for you?
Yeah, I feel like I'm the luckiest coach in the league for being in Nashville, Tennessee with our ownership, with our management, with the players that are in the room right now, with the coaches that I get to work with every day, and the fan base for me. And to watch the fan base grow and explode to where it is right now. I tell people all the time, and then I have friends that come in. I just had friends for this last exhibition game come in. My son plays down at Florida Gulf Coast University, and the moms came up. They call themselves moms of champions, because they back-to-back national titles.
Nice.
Down at FGCU. So 6 of them were in town, and my wife went with them. And I had some friends from my high school hockey team in town, and their kids. And they were obviously older now, not in high school. So they've got kids that are now turning 21 and 23. So they came to Nashville. They could not believe the building, the rink, the atmosphere. And it was a preseason game.
I know.
It was a preseason game.
It was an incredible
atmosphere. And so, I mean, I've been here watching. And you're right. I've spent all my time in the East. And if you remember going back, there was a time where the East only came to Nashville once every third year.
Yeah, right.
You'd only play the division.
That's right.
And so, you know, I might not have been here for 3 years. There's a chance that on that third year I could have been fired. Like, I might have missed it. I might have missed the trip. Yeah. I might not even have made it. And so I feel like I was hardly ever in Nashville. I didn't know anything about it. And I remember when we were taking the job and I was talking to David Poile, we were leaving to coach the world championships that next morning at like 6 a.m. And there was a decision being made that night. My wife and I are looking like, Nashville? Are we doing Nashville? Like, we're not even sure about what it's all about. And for me right now, Nashville, one of the best cities in the United States. Nashville is Predator hockey, one of the best hockey markets in the United States. It's just awesome. I love it.
Good job by you working in two back-to-back national champions.
Yeah, FGCU. moms of champions.
That's nice.
Well, speaking of the moms, I was talking to your wife, Kristen, and you mentioned your connection to the East, but your daughter Elizabeth is now committed to play at Boston College. So you and Mike Vrabel have got to get a little chapter like the Boston College fan club here. He's got a son playing up there.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that, I mean, Brian Poile, Boston College.
Yeah, there you go.
And the Poiles. And so there's lots of people who, you know, have gone to Boston College. It was a long process this summer with my daughter. We spent a lot of time, and we have spent a lot of time. She's a good softball player. She's a real good student. We were looking at a couple of teams up. She wanted to go back to New England. I said, you know, have you ever really played softball in New England? Are you sure? we're Florida residents, yeah. And Jack goes to FGCU. Yeah. I'm like, FGCU still talking to you, sure? And you're not going to wear a T-shirt until, like, your second playoff game. And so she was adamant. She wanted to go north. And so we were looking at a couple of really good schools up there, like Brown and MIT and Boston College. We went and visited, and it became available, and it became an option for her to play and go to school there. And we quick booked a flight and went up and toured the campus, and it was spectacular, just spectacular. She's grown up with hockey her whole life. Since she's been 3 years old, she's been going to hockey games. She wanted to go to a college where she could support a hockey team, like a big-time hockey team. She loves going to her Brentwood High School football team on a Friday night. She wanted to support her college football team. I mean, she's got it going on. She's playing big-time softball, and you know, she's going to get that experience from a hockey standpoint, from a football standpoint, from a school standpoint. She wanted to be near Boston. She wanted to be near our family. So we're just over the moon about her being able to go there and be a part of that program.
Now, I was told, now you tell me your version of this story, that Brentwood High, you know, she's the captain, senior, the players only practices, you know, get-togethers, workouts, and she had to shut you out. You wanted to come in and with the glove, and she said, you can't come.
I did. I had my catcher's mitt ready to go, and I'm thinking, well, if you hit ground balls and if you do everything, you're not going to get the work yourself. Yeah. So me and another dad, we're all geared up. We're in our sweats, and we got our ball cap on. I got my catcher's mitt from when my first son got into baseball when he was 6 years old, so 15 years ago. I got my mitt ready to go. And she's looking at me. She's like, you're not coming, Dad. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm not coming? And so I was, like, so dejected walking around. She went out the door, and Kristen's looking at me like, I'm like, are you kidding me? I can't go practice? So captain's practice only.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
I'm curious how the guys have come back. Like, you could put together a tournament last year of the really good teams like you guys that lost in the first round. I mean, it's a tough league. The Tampa Bay Lightning, go on down the list. Yeah. So that's got to be tough to live with over the summer. But it looks like the guys have come back with a good attitude. The success has been good in the game so far. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think every day away from a tough ending. And let's be honest, they're all tough. It was tough 2 years ago, and we made it. We went to the second round. They're just tough. We're in the business of winning and being successful, and we want to be successful inside of that room. And when it doesn't happen, it's tough. Every day away from that put you towards the brighter future that's out there and the new season that's out there. And so as the end of July rolls around and guys start getting back on the ice in August, that's almost in the rearview mirror. Certainly you remember what happened, but it's more about trying to see what's coming and trying to get ready for that and prepared for that. And as they get to training camp, we got a great group of guys in there. I mean, they come back in shape, and they're unbelievable people. As you guys know, just dealing with them, they're terrific human beings first and foremost. So that makes my job a lot easier. And so we're fortunate about that. We've got great leadership in the room, and training camp's gone really well. It's been fast. It's been physical. There's been guys vying for jobs, and I really like the way we played the games. You know, we got the one loss down in Tampa, but we sent a group down there that was, we were missing some real key veteran players. I love the way we played. I mean, we had that game. We were doing the right things, and now Kucherov scored a big goal. Go figure, right? With 30 seconds to go, and we didn't get the results. But it was more about, for me, it's, you know, in training camp, it's really about the process and the evaluation and trying to get things onto the ice and get them going well. I thought we played a competitive game down there. We just didn't get the results we were looking for. So things have gone good. We got a couple games left where we're still evaluating and still want to get better, and that's our goal.
Peter Laviolette is with us, Predators head coach. And I told these guys that I ran into at Brent's dinner, and we talked for a few minutes, and I said he was over the moon about the rookies. And this was after the rookie showcase. Yeah. Now that you've seen them all through a training camp, what did you learn about the youngsters in this organization?
Well, what I really liked about the rookies, just starting going back to the rookie camp, was I've been here now for, this is my 6-1 where I've watched the rookies play. To me, we looked like we were we looked like we were more NHL ready. And just the way we played that game, I thought we played excellent in the rookie games. We found success, and that had to do with the players that were on the ice. And so I thought it was really good starting there. And then you know, they start to make that move into the big camp, and they're starting to mix with our guys that have been here, and they start to play games. And again, I was just impressed in practice and in games. You know, we just sent a whole bunch of guys down to Milwaukee to either A, continue their career or start their pro career. That doesn't mean we're disappointed with them. Those moves have to be made. You're only allowed to keep 23 players, and those players are available to us at any point. Whenever we want a player, but we want to keep them playing, we want to keep them developing. And all of our players have gone through that, from Colton Sissons to Victor Arvidsson to Philip Forsberg, Kalle Järnkrok, Roman Josi, Pekka Rinne. It's a development league, and we need them on the ice and developing. And when they are ready, when they do start to make that move up, and they might go back to Milwaukee and then maybe up again, there's no set path on how it works. You know that they've been developed the right way. And so we're thrilled with the way the guys played. And you know, sometimes even they look at going to Milwaukee as a demotion. We look at it as part of the process.
The game the other night, the way it ended with Pitlick scoring the goal, and obviously the goal is what you want, to win the game. But how he stayed in that play and fought for the puck, that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, so he obviously had a real impressive camp. He was really strong in the rookie games. He was strong in the games that he played for us, and that's what you want, right? You want to put your young players out there in overtime and not have them try to figure out what's going on, but to actually know what's going on and to make a difference in the game and in the outcome. And so he was able to do that. Tolvanen with a big goal at the time to get us. I felt like I was really happy with our group, because I felt like we were chasing the game, and we were behind, we caught it, we're behind, we caught it, we're behind, we caught it. And so we're able to hang in there. But it was the contributions from Pitlick. It was the contributions from Trennan, who got in a big scrap. It was the contributions from Josh Wilkins, who made the pass to Tolvanen. And so there was a lot of good things that went on inside of that game that we were real proud of our young players.
I'll say this. I said in postgame, what stood out to me as we talk about preseason in all sports, that last sequence, you have bodies flying everywhere, bodies like Forsberg, Duchesne with the goal.
Yeah.
Johansson. This is a preseason game.
Yeah.
These are your top line guys, and they're fighting like it's the last game of the season to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if this factored into it, but maybe that's from not playing them at the beginning. You know, they want to play. They want to compete. They never want to be out of something. And so we held them out. We worked on the power play. There's risk that goes with playing in those early games, and you know, you try to protect your players a little bit, but eventually they got to start playing. So this was their first crack at it. I thought all the guys that you just mentioned were awesome. And that goes, I've seen that go different ways. I've seen veteran players come out on the ice in preseason games, and they just, you know, it leads to a lot of frustration from a coaching standpoint, because you're like, well, all right, it's preseason. You just kind of shake it off and be like, well, let's get to game one. Enough of this. I thought they were awesome. I mean, they compete. And Matt Duchesne said it best, you know, like he hadn't played in front of a preseason crowd like that ever. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the way the game played out, too. And the fact that we were chasing it, the fact that we did tie it with the goal he pulled, we did win it in overtime, we were all jazzed up. Everybody was. So, I mean, that's awesome. But that goes back to the original question about Nashville, you know. That's our fan base. That's the Bridgestone Arena. That's the location of it. It's just awesome. I love it.
You spoke earlier about the summer and, you know, coming off of disappointment in a tough league. Not many changes to this team this year, but you did have PK leave. Matt Duchesne comes in. Dan Lambert, part of the coaching staff.
Right.
How big has it been to have a couple of different voices in the room?
Yeah, it's definitely, different in a good way, in a positive way. You know, PK was awesome. I told him that when he left. Like, he brought so much positivity to this team, both on the ice and off the ice. He's a giving human being, and he gives constantly of himself to others. In his time here, we were a really successful hockey team, and that's got a great deal to do with him. You know, we ended up making that move, and Dante Fabbro started to show who he was, and we felt like we could do that. We feel like we've got other good defensemen as well. Dan Hamhuis has played well during the year, and We just feel like we were able to make that move, and what it did was it allowed for a guy like Duchesne to come in, like you said. And you saw him the other night. I thought he was dynamic with his game. I know it's exhibition. I know it's preseason. But, you know, sometimes you are who you are. And he was a dynamic player on the ice. So that was really positive to see. Dan Lambert, I thought he, you know, taking those five guys out and giving them 3 or 4 days to work on the power play, I thought it looked really good in game one. So that was a positive. Well, those voices, I think, are important. Those players are important. And now we got to put it together for the regular season.
All right. You survived. The hot seat is over.
I made it.
No more questions about you. You handled it perfectly.
I made it.
Hey, thanks for doing this.
I'm going to be late for practice. I'm glad you guys are happy.
Good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Take care.
Head coach Peter Laviolette, we appreciate him stopping by our table. We will take a break. We will come back more here live from Centennial Sportsplex on Darren, Donick, and Chase. We'll head over to West End at 1 o'clock. We'll check in with Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason. Also have some players here when they wrap up practice here live at Centennial Sportsplex. You just heard Predators head coach Peter Laviolette, and that was really good stuff here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Anything stand out to you guys?
Well, one thing he kind of slipped in there that I found interesting, because I had not heard him put it in these terms, but he said, we got a role here on this team for a guy to play 18 minutes a night.
Yeah.
And interpreting that, I take that to mean that, hey, they brought in Matt Duchesne. You know who five of the six top-line guys are going to be, the top six. But it basically says to me that you're competing. You have some really good players, and only one of them is going to be on the second line with Duchesne or Johansson, whoever they deploy that. We're looking out on the ice right now, and Kyle Turris is working on his game with the assistant coaches before practice. In the line rushes this week at practice, he's been that guy on the wing at the third line. So I think he's part of that competition. You know Craig Smith is capable of playing there. You got Daniel Carr, the second guy on the ice this morning. He's out there doing some work. You've got, as we mentioned, the great story from camp last year, Rocco Grimaldi. So I do think that that's a real competition that's going on right now, and it's essential. Right, you want to have the deepest forward units that you've ever had, and so to do that, they've got to have production from that second line. That was an issue all year last year, right? So I thought that was an interesting way that he termed that. I got a job that, you know, right, it's 18 minutes a night. You get to play power play. You're on the second line. You're going to have scoring. You got to produce. So who's going to win that job?
I think that's why, you know, we talked about this yesterday of breaking up Jofa and trying to get those two top scoring lines with the addition of Matt Duchesne, that could make it so important, finding who that guy is going to be that you can add to complete that. And so that stood out to me. And also, he just seems – there's like a – and I get this vibe from everybody. There's this calmness but also excitement about the season that they know what last year was. They know how it ended. But now they're focused and they're in a very good state of mind to get ready to battle for this season. And I think that's a good thing. There's this determination that I see out of these guys that just really gets me excited to see how deep this team can go.
That's a good way of putting it. I sense the same thing. I mean, there's look, just we, something we always air. Get a relaxed Peter Laviolette this time of year. I mean, we come here every year, preseason camp, and, you know, we're right here. He sits down at the table, and we have, really good conversation. So it you always get that vibe, but to your point, I did kind of sense the same thing. Like, you could tell, like, this team feels a little bit different to him. Me just trying to read body language, it seems like he's really excited about this team and what this team can do and this upcoming season. So I picked up on that, too. Not that he's not excited in the past, but, you know, sometimes, like, as we said here, like, there was no change. You know everybody, but now there's been, there's a Matt Duchesne. You know, PK's out of the mix. You've got a couple young guys that, and as he mentioned, some young guys that are hungry. And even if they were sent to their juniors team or sent to Milwaukee, he seemed, encouraged by what he saw. Like, okay, well, if we need them, I think those guys can help us. So I picked up on that, too. I just felt like I don't know. And, you know, another thing is, unfortunately, they had a lot more time off, you know. Yeah. And so there's probably a real eagerness to get back into it. I mean, you know how those long hauls, I mean, it's a beautiful thing when you make the long run, right? But it's also a grind, as we all know. And sometimes it feels like the off season was really, really short. And it's like, oh, we got to, you know, everything's got to get cranked up again, where it's been a while since they've had this long of an off season.
You guys know I am not one that harps on, just like with the Titans, I'm always saying the preseason results don't mean anything. And so I'm hypocritical if I say that they do. But I was concerned coming in about what would the vibe feel like, not just from the players, but also from the fans, right, after the disappointment of losing in the first round, right? Because you have this narrative that's been thrown out there that, oh, man, they were in the finals 2 years ago, and then last year, two years ago, they lost in the second round, and then last year, the first round. They're going down. When really, they've stayed on the same plane. They are a team that has a chance to win a Stanley Cup if things go right. But how is that narrative going to play out? And I see it, a great enthusiasm, a great hunger from the team and from the fans. And I heard Peter Laviolette say he couldn't believe he saw that with the fans. The fans had that a great attitude. The team had the great attitude, and so I think that's helped them. And we'll see if that means something when the season starts and help them maybe start off on the right foot here.
I get this vibe from everybody on this team, and you know I love to use analogies, that every time they wake up in the morning and they go and they look at themselves in the mirror, they have a bloody lip. And that's they're reminded of last season when they see that bloody lip. And they use it as motivation. But it's not like, you know, they're mad and they're like, oh, I can't believe last year happened. It's more like, okay, yeah, well, this isn't going to happen again. So you just watch. And there's just this excitement. And they're using it as a positive. And I like Reed. Is Ryan Johansson walks back. I like the vibe that I get from everybody on this team right now, and it started with him. I mean, with Peter Laviolette. I mean, when he was sitting here with us, I was like, okay, there is a determination that they're going to go win this thing. It's like the major league line. There's only one thing left to do that I can't say on radio.
Yeah.
But win the whole thing. Exactly. So that's just how I feel. And that's look, it's a long season. It's September. We know that. But I think they want to do it all. They want to go and they want to dominate the regular season and then obviously do what they need to do in the playoffs.
But it's such a long ride. And that's, you know, and I was curious, too, that he sort of came out right out and said, too, in terms of when you asked him about Duchesne coming in, yeah. Subban going out, that he was not hesitant to say, we saw something. We think that Dante Fabbro is ready to take that. And I had a guy, I remember last year, he only played, what, four games in the regular season before he played in that playoff series?
Six games in the playoffs, so 10. So 10 games, that's it.
I remember asking one of the hockey people, I don't feel comfortable mentioning his name, but I was like, is Fabbro doing as well as I think he looked pretty good. He was like, the way he put it was this, he goes, I keep waiting for his youth to show up.
Sure.
I keep waiting for his inexperience to get exposed, and it just doesn't happen. Like every game, okay, here's the playoff game that it didn't get exposed. He has handled everything that's come his way. Now it's a full grind of the 6 month regular season, but they feel as comfortable as you can feel with him. It seems going into this challenge.
You know what's so weird about him, and I'll even put Pitlick in this, is I was doing stuff for Preds Profiles, and so I got to talk to both of them, you know, pretty extensively the other day. And I'm sitting there and I'm asking him all these questions, and it hit me in the middle of it of, they just got here. Like they've barely been here. And I feel like they've been here for a couple years now, just because of how they conduct themselves and how mature they are and, you know, what we saw in a short amount of time.
Well, I think that goes back to what Willie was saying about Dante Fabbro. It feels like he's been here for a long time, right? And it's 10 games. It doesn't feel like just 10 games. But he played six games in the playoffs and four games at the end of the regular season. It feels like he spent at least half the season here last year, which is a real credit to him. By the way, Tenorti walked by us. He is a large,
he's a giant.
He's a tree. Large man. Yeah. Holy smokes. That Whew, him on skates.
We haven't talked about him a lot.
He's not quite Hal Gill size, but close.
Well, he's but in the ballpark. He's I think he's bigger though, right? He's like not taller, but I think he's a little bit bigger frame than Skillsy. No,
I don't know. Skillsy in the pads was pretty big.
Yeah,
pretty big.
Skillsy's a brick wall.
Keep that for the sound drop.
You know what? I should probably look back at our time in Dallas. Maybe this knee injury started with him harassing me in the workout room, right? About pick up your speed, your heart rate. What do you do?
Well,
and
it's
screaming
tape.
At me like
have you ever been checked on an elevator?
And, you know, making me punch the bags. Maybe the knee problem started in Dallas with Skillsy.
Well, maybe.
I never put that together till now. Like, I think about him being the workout coach in there screaming at me with a whistle. And
you came back to the room. And I thought, I was like, Darren, are you okay?
I thought
you were going to pass out.
Right, because Skillsy put me through a workout like I was a professional athlete, and I'm not. And I'm a lot older than these guys.
I got checked.
Who we're talking about. Dante Fabro was 22, 21.
Yeah.
He was treating me like I'm in my early 20s.
Yeah, he's trying to get you back there.
Well, look what it got me, injured.
Now, we've got a couple of esteemed members of our morning crew here as we wrap up this first hour. You got Nick Cale, experienced hockey guy, Philadelphia. He's got the layer on.
He's on the perch.
He's got shorts, too.
He's claimed a key spot. But you got Marquise over here.
Shorts and a t-shirt.
Not realized that it's really cold in here. And he's already saying.
He thinks he was going
to. Bad decision.
A spring day in Tuscaloosa.
You're going
to
freeze. Yes, you are.
I have three jackets on.
Wait another 15, 20 minutes. You're going
to
be hurt.
To when, show you where I'm
when
at,
when the cold attacks you.
He's saying he's fine, but
now,
know how it goes.
Right. Yeah, we know.
You
we
need
know
a leather jacket like me because this thing is very warm. I recommend it. Nick Cale would recommend it because he's seen the jacket.
Cold attacks you, you'll feel it. You won't be able to get out from underneath
it. But it just creeps. It creeps, though. Every 5-10 minutes, you're like, man, it's getting a little more chilly. And then the next thing you know, you're like, can I go buy a sweatshirt from somebody?
is there a pro shop?
Are they
selling hoodies? All right, that'll do it for the first hour. We'll come back a lot more here from Centennial Sportsplex on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.